Hello! Welcome to the Rotten Horror Picture Show, the horror movie podcast, where we talk about films off the Rotten Tomatoes 200 Best Horror Movies of All Time list. My name is Clay. With me, as always, is Amanda. How are you doing, Amanda?
I'm doing well. I have a business idea.
What's that?
I'm going to make a pet food brand.
Mm-hmm.
It's going to be called Slop for Dog.
Yep. So, I mean, there's so much slop here already.
Exactly. Everybody loves slop now. Yeah. So Slop for Dog.
I have big news.
No.
Big news for me.
For Dog?
Unfortunately, no.
Oh.
I was followed on Instagram by Arrow Video the other day.
Sweet.
That means absolutely nothing. But, yeah.
I think that's a sign of your good taste.
Well, it happened because
your good, bad taste.
They put up an Instagram story of someone in the, you know how they have the Criterion Closet?
Mm-hmm.
So these smaller boutique ones have been doing similar things. Mm-hmm. And Arrow has like the Arrow Video Vault. And so
cute.
They put a thing up on their story, and I just slid into their DMs, and I said, I need to be in the Arrow Video Vault.
Mm.
And then they friended me.
Oh.
And then they sent me a message that said, let us know when you're in London.
Oh.
So,
Clay,
sign up to patreon.com/thepenskyfile.
Send Clay to London.
So Clay can go to London and look, go in there and go, I already have all these.
To which they will probably be thrilled, because it means you've been spending your hard-earned money on their products.
Yeah. Anyway.
Anyway.
Today, we are talking about a movie from 1933.
Hmm.
It's a film. It's number 118 on our list.
Hmm.
It is called The Island of Lost Souls. It has an 88% Rotten Tomatoes score with an 81% audience score.
Mm.
Had you seen this before?
I don't think I had.
Mm-hmm.
I went into this thinking that I did, and then as I watched it, I was like, I don't think I've ever actually seen this. I know I've seen clips from it,
yeah,
but I don't think I'd ever sat down and watched it.
Yeah. Not that much of a chore. It's a lean 71 minutes.
Yes.
Back in the classic days where they were... You know, H.G. Wells did not like this movie because he thought it relied too much on horror and not enough on philosophical aspects that was in his book there.
Right, because everybody knows the best movies lean heavily on philosophy.
Yes, which is funny because when I was watching it, I was like, they seem to be talking about like the ethics of this question.
Yeah. what does it mean to be a human being?
But I wonder if it's because they took his work that probably took him multiple years to write and crunched it down to 71 minutes.
Oh, absolutely. Right. Like, I feel like that's a common experience any writer would have that has written anything successful and then somebody else reinterprets it. You're probably like, what the fuck?
Yeah. Yeah. If I am ever so lucky to have somebody do that to my own work, I would, I'm really on the fence about whether or not I would just be like, yeah, man, the check cleared, do whatever you want. Or if I would be like, you know what? I have an excuse to bitch about this. Yeah. People will listen to me because people always stand up for the original.
And I worked so hard on that.
Yeah.
Like, have you ever, this is a little bit of a tangent. Have you ever like done work in a workshop format where you are like not collaborating, but you have a group of peers and they are going to critique your work? Have you ever?
Oh, sure. That was my entire college experience.
That's true.
Every class I had was bringing in work and putting it on a wall and having people you know, tear it apart.
Well, I always found the thing, this probably says a lot about what kind of shitty person I am. The thing I always found most difficult to deal with were the people who liked something I had did, but in my opinion, were totally misunderstanding it.
Sure.
That always bothered me more than people who would come in and be like, I don't know. It just feels like it's missing something. Like, this part's kind of slow, or I'm not really sure. Like, this character doesn't seem like consistent. Like, those things I had an easier time with because I could do something about them. I had a much harder time when somebody was like, no, I thought it was great. I really liked how like this person just totally gives up in the end when like that was not my point.
Right. Yeah.
When I was writing it. And so I can, anyway, this is all to say that H.G. Wells and I are essentially the same.
Oh yeah. I've been saying that for years.
And should be treated as such.
Yeah. Yeah. I remember hearing that Ray Bradbury once was at like a college class or something, and they were talking about Fahrenheit 451, and someone was like, so clearly this book, you know, is a very astute meditation on the horrors of the consequences of censorship, and he was like, no, everybody says that. It's about how much I hate TV. And it's like, you know, it's at those times where you kind of don't want.
Yeah.
Like, that's one of the brilliant things about David Lynch is that he never talked about his stuff.
Yep.
Because I feel like, especially with him, if he were to explain to you why he did X or Y, you'd go, huh.
You're like, oh, that's it?
Yeah. That's kind of dumb.
All right. Well, yeah.
Anyway.
So had you seen this movie before?
Once a long time ago. Yes. This was... So my introduction to this movie... A little loud there. This was the movie where anytime you watch a documentary or anything about the Universal Monsters, they always show a clip from this as the example of a monster movie from another company. That came out around the same time in the wake of the monster boom.
Yeah.
Because I think this is probably one of the most highly regarded. It's the only, I mean, none of the Universal movies are in the Criterion Collection. This is in the Criterion Collection.
Yeah.
But yeah, so I'd seen it once a long time ago. It's always talked about as like a brilliant, et cetera, et cetera. I don't know.
You got a little bit of a skeptical bent to your brow.
Well, we can get into it.
Okay.
But
is the point of the podcast.
Yes. Right? Before we get into that, if you'd like to follow along as Amanda and I cover sequels this year,
yes,
head over to patreon.com/thepenskyfile, sign up for our Patreon, and take me to London to go to the Arrow Video Vault. And also, this month in June, we are putting up a second Patreon episode about the trip Amanda and I took to the Stanley Hotel in Colorado, which was the hotel that was the inspiration for Stephen King's The Shining. We did a seance while we were there, which we talk about. We did a short little interview with the apparitionist Hannibal.
Yep.
And yeah, it was a lot of fun.
It was super fun.
So check that out over there. Now, we're going to play the... I haven't looked. I feel like there's probably not a trailer for this. And if there is, it's probably one of those early 30s ones where it's just like, it's all words.
Come see the monster.
Not even that. I think it's just going to be like music and words on the screen, like in giant scare font.
I see.
So if that's the case, I'll find something to put here. But we're just going to take a quick break, come back and talk about it.
Convinced that the thing on this table isn't human.
Its cries are human.
Do you know what it is, what I began with?
No.
An animal.
Well, we may as well discuss this frankly, now that you know the facts. I wanted to prove how completely she was a woman.
I'm not beaten. Get everything ready.
For what?
This time I'll burn out all the animal in her. I'll make her completely human.
No. Okay. Also, Mm. Before we get into this, I do want to give everybody a scheduling update, because originally we had put up our Gremlins episode to cover while Amanda and I were kind of busy doing other stuff in May. And so we're back. I said we'd be back in June, which is true. However, we're basically going to be gone again until like late July.
Yeah.
So,
Sorry, guys.
We have a whole backlog of stuff on Patreon we haven't put out over the years, so we'll probably put a couple of those out. And then we'll be back with a new episode probably late July, I think.
Yeah.
All right? But we'll be continuing to do Patreon stuff, so go outside. See, get some sun. Yeah,
it's beautiful. Go on vacation somewhere nice.
Yeah.
Spend time with your loved ones.
What's that? You don't have any money? I don't care.
Yeah.
I have it.
You know what?
Because you're on our Patreon.
Because you're on our Patreon. Go take a walk.
Yeah. It's go beautiful. Fly a kite. It's
beautiful out.
Anyway, that was said with love.
Yes.
Island of Lost Souls from 1930. we appreciate all of you.
Yes.
And your support. Thank you. Island of Lost Souls from 1933, directed by Earl C. Kenton, written by Aldemar Young and Philip Wiley, based on the book by H.G. Wells, starring Charles Laughton,
yes.
Richard Arlen. Charles Laughton, the director of, he directed one movie, and that movie was Night of the Hunter.
Oh, that's right. I keep forgetting it's him.
Yeah, it's
he's
really
great.
He's also was married to Elsa Lanchester. So
him?
Yeah, I know. Yeah, he's kind of egg looking.
Good job.
I know.
Yeah.
Richard Arlen, Layla Hyams, Kathleen Burke, Arthur Hall, Stanley Fields, and Bela Lugosi.
Yay.
As the Sayer of the Law. He only made $800.
Criminal.
Well, we got a couple differing opinions on the trivia here.
Mm.
Because it says he only made $800, which was less than any other actor on the project, which was then countered by someone else who said that is true, but it's because he worked fewer days. His day rate was essentially the same.
Yeah.
Who's to say? Either way, the $800 didn't go as far as it probably did for other people because he was in the middle of a bankruptcy problem.
Yeah.
It's crazy to me, of all the people who became like stars out of the Universal monster boom, that he got, I mean, obviously he had his own problems, but that he got so royally fucked.
But doesn't that, I mean, that happens modern day too, right? Like how many of these, you know, didn't Nicolas Cage go bankrupt? Like,
well, I guess I don't even mean that. I mean, like, you know, he did Dracula for peanuts.
Yeah.
And then he never really got another role like that.
Yeah.
Even though he became a marquee name with Karloff was getting better stuff than he was.
Mm-hmm.
And then, yeah, I mean, I guess he obviously had a drug problem and stuff. So it probably was.
Poor guy.
I think it was a little bit of him.
Justice for Bella.
Being a wreck and a little bit of him just not getting much respect.
Yeah.
Anyway.
We still love him.
Amanda.
Yes, Clay.
What happens in Island of Lost Souls, or on the Island of Lost Souls?
A mad doctor conducts ghastly genetic experiments on a remote island in the South Seas, much to the fear and disgust of the shipwrecked sailor who finds himself trapped there.
Yes.
Yes, that is what happens.
Correct.
Well, Clay, some things you'll find on the Island of Lost Souls include
Jeffrey Epstein. Topical jokes.
Are we going to become one of those podcasts?
Here we go.
Cultural commentary.
Let's just say the kids on that island weren't goats. Hello.
Things you'll find on the Island of Lost Souls include a doctor?
Yeah. That's always the best when
thanks for helping me, doc, and the guy looks at you confused. Yeah. A floating zoo.
Sorry, real quick, short story.
About the doctor that like prescribed you a bunch of stuff and wasn't a doctor?
Sort of.
Oh.
So your husband and I have been friends for a long time.
True.
We went out years ago to celebrate our mutual friend's having his second child.
Mm.
And so we were all meeting up at this one place, and some pregame fun had been had involving brownies.
okay.
before they got to where we were.
Uh-huh.
And so we're all standing around.
This was back in the day when you had to make your own edibles.
Yes, this was not.
Weed was illegal.
Yeah, this was definitely like all the weed ended up in like four of the brownies and our friend ate one of them. And we're standing around waiting for our table at the restaurant we're at. And then the friend in question just straight up keels over and passes out like face first onto the ground.
I do remember this story.
The best way I can describe it, and this is a very specific description, if you've ever seen the episode of The Simpsons where Ned Flanders starts to describe to Homer the difference between apple cider and apple juice, and then Homer's brain slides out and then Homer just collapses. That's exactly what it looked like.
Great.
So he's on the floor. All of us are standing around not knowing what to do. And then this like angel sweeps in, this guy, and just like gets down and he's like talking to our friend and he's like checking. Blah, blah, blah. So we just assume this guy must be like an EMT. At least he knows what's going on.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah. This is a medical professional.
Yeah. Long story short, our friend ends up getting an ambulance, going away, blah, blah, blah. And so we're talking amongst ourselves, and one of us says, so did anybody talk to that guy? Like, was he a doctor or something? And said, no, he was a cell phone salesman. Because the next day we were talking to our friend, and he's like, yeah, I don't know what happened, but that guy, after he helped me like wake up, he put his card in my pocket and said to call him if I needed a phone. And so we were all like, oh, we just assumed that this person who presented as a knowledgeable of the situation was that, when he was just there to make a sale, I guess. I don't know. Well, thank you to Mystery Phone Guy, whoever
Mystery
you were.
Mystery Phone Guy. Yeah. You all were the shipwrecked sailors of the day.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. Actually, the way that my friend fell, very similar to the way the guy gets tossed boat to boat.
We will talk about that later. Yeah. You'll also find a floating zoo.
Best kind. International waters.
Yeah,
can
have
do anything
whatever you want. A slight list to
You know
to
who
port.
Else was in international waters?
All right, okay.
Titanic. Look what happened.
Don't you mean the Olympic?
Yes, thank you. Thank you.
Your wife would be very mad at me
the
for
The truth comes
this.
Out. My favorite conspiracy theory. Anyway.
Anyway, you'll also find a black-hatted grave-robbing ghoul.
Great description. I love the word...
that's what everybody calls me.
I love the word ghoul.
I wear black hats and I have bones all around my house.
That's true. Yeah. Yeah. Ghoul is a great word.
I have a tiny mustache and a little goatee.
Listen, I'm not supposed to point those out.
Look, I haven't gotten my face waxed in a while. Come on. The Law and the House of Pain.
Yes.
Which is what everyone calls you and your wife.
Yeah. I'm not going to say which one's which, though.
Figure it out. a Jeff Hardy-esque boat-to-boat fall.
Yeah. Best part of the movie, easily.
Just a literal rag doll.
Yeah. So first of all of the punches in this movie look like they connect.
Especially the first one where the drunk boat captain hits Maling.
Yeah.
Like, that one looked like a real punch.
Also, not in a million years would I have been able to tell you that guy's name. So thank you once again.
This is what I am here for. This is why, despite your attempts to fire me, you have not done so yet. I know what I'm here for.
You're like a rogue policeman. The captain just won't fire you, despite all
the
company property you destroyed.
I'm too good at what I do.
One of these days, Ryan.
You will find plastic surgeries, blood transfusions, gland extracts, ray baths, you know, normal self-care.
Yes. I do want to jump back to the Jeff Hardy thing real quick.
Sure.
The punches looked like they connected, but then the way he just whips him, he doesn't even throw him overboard into the water.
No.
He throws him onto like
deck to deck.
Yeah. And he like hits a big box or something.
And like
when
a
he
railing
goes down.
And stuff.
Yeah. That man would be dead.
He would absolutely be dead. He landed like on his neck.
Yeah.
And then flipped his legs over his head.
Yeah. It was.
And then staggers to his feet and is like, what is the meaning of this?
Quite a choice.
You would have been extremely dead.
Anyway, self-care.
Anyway, self-care. You'll also find Dr. Moreau's terrible acting.
Yeah.
When they sink the boat.
Oh, it's like, oh.
When they sink the boat and he's like, oh, no.
Oh, no.
Oh, what could have happened? I just can't explain it. Mm. Well, anyway, I guess you're stuck here. Let's go back to the house.
That's actually also the lost verse of Baby, It's Cold Outside. It's when he sinks her boat.
Drunk ship captains as comic relief.
Always works.
Because we got two.
That's true.
There's only two ship captains in this movie, and both of them are drunks.
What is that really? I mean, feels like if you're coming after a certain subset of people, you know.
Are you saying
really
this
fair?
Movie is prejudiced against boat captains?
I mean, the movie's saying that. I'm not saying
that.
Oh,
I see. Yeah. All right. You will also find a camp queen table lean.
Incredible choice.
Yeah.
When Moreau and the other guy walk into like the surgery room or something, and Moreau leans on the table, like it's like he expected there to be a, like something else there,
like a divan or
yeah,
like a fainting couch or something.
He expected the thing he was sitting on to be different,
yeah.
And so he had to like adjust on the fly, and he's just like leans way back and crosses his legs, like I was really expecting there to be a back on this chair.
Right, he looks so sassy and pleased with himself when he does it, though.
Yeah,
which I fucking love.
Yeah.
And last but not least, little knives.
Little knives.
I love it when they all get real excited about the little knives.
Yes. So this is obviously an adaptation of The Island of Dr. Moreau.
Yes.
By H.G. Wells. It's an interesting. It's an interesting one to choose, given the extensive prosthetics that are needed.
Because
this is 1933. This is 2 years after Frankenstein.
Mm.
And, like, I can't imagine how much work was required for this.
There's so many people
in
prosthetics and makeup and the whole nine yards. There's a lot of people.
Yeah. Some of them... A bit more phoned in than others. Like I don't love Bela Lugosi's look.
Yeah,
he kind of looks like they just put a mop over his head and cut out eye holes on it. Sort
of. You know what makes it work for me?
What's that?
He wears clothes.
Yeah.
He wears full, like he's wearing slacks and a button down shirt,
mm-hmm.
and it's different. All the other creatures are only wearing some sort of pants.
Yeah.
But they're like kind of ragged. Like raggedy, like they're much less put together, and the fact that his outfit is so close to like a normal man's, but his whole face is so covered in fur still,
mm-hmm.
that makes it work for me. And he, you know, he has those classic Bela Lugosi eyes.
That's the thing. I mean, 80% of Bela Lugosi is the eyes. The other 20 is his voice.
Right. And so, yeah. You've got both of those in this. Yeah. So.
So what'd you think of this?
I really like this movie.
Yeah.
I do. I know the criticism against it is that it's very talky,
mm-hmm.
And it's very slow. But I think especially given the era it was made in, it's kind of shocking that it was made at all.
Yeah. When I was watching it, honestly, especially when you get towards the end, when they have, when they all start going crazy and you mm-hmm. get that sort of parade of mutants.
Yes.
Which is very creepy. The only thing I could think of was this is regarded as like a classic horror movie.
Mm-hmm.
I assume was received relatively well, but Todd Browning's Freaks was like unable to be seen. Mm-hmm. And obviously there's difference because the people in Freaks are real, et cetera, et cetera.
Right,
but,
right.
But still, it's the same kind of... display of the grotesque that I'm surprised in Freaks was such a...
When was Freaks again?
The year before.
Oh, wow.
32.
Wow,
yeah. Okay. So just a year before, that movie is like considered unwatchable.
Yeah.
And, you know,
so grotesque that it should not be seen.
Whereas this one, I don't know. Does it just come down to the fact that one of them is makeup and the other one is the horrors of...
Probably.
Humanity?
Probably. You I don't want to oversimplify it, but I definitely think that has something to do with it, where I think part of it is also in Freaks, the movie does not try to take the humanity away from the performers in the Freak Show.
Right.
They are fully human, and they are treated as human. Your heroes in Freaks are the Freaks, right? Yeah. Like, the quote-unquote normal people are the shitty ones. Mm. And so the movie is asking you to sympathize with the abnormal. Whereas in this movie, the quote-unquote normal people are the heroes, and they're all good.
Yeah.
And then the things, as they start calling themselves at the end of the movie, are monstrosities, and are maybe they weren't bad to begin with, but they have been turned bad because they have gone against nature. And it's sort of this way of reinforcing the status quo rather than challenging it. And so I can see that plus the makeup issue making it a lot more palatable to audiences at the time.
Yeah. And it definitely does skew towards normies being the heroes.
Yeah.
Because even the one creature who is worth saving, quote unquote, is the hot one.
Lota.
Yeah. Who's, you know, she's mostly girl.
Yeah.
She's got weird fingers, but, you know, she cries. So does Megan Fox.
She cries. That makes her a true woman.
Yeah. 100% Fijian. Is that what he says or something like that? Polynesian. That's what he says. Polynesian. You know how Polynesians have those hairy finger claws.
I mean, I don't know. I got claws.
You just waxed your fingers already?
Yeah. Yeah. Just my fingers, not my face. Sorry. Priorities.
Yeah. So for me, I don't dislike it. Mm-hmm. I think maybe it's a victim of, you know, like I said, it is one that is talked about all the time.
Yes.
And as being, you know, a high watermark from another company, it's in the Criterion Collection. And so I think I always expect a little more from it.
Mm.
This time watching it, I don't remember this the first time I watched it, but I was actually surprised at how much discussion there was.
Yeah.
Because like 75% of the movie is Moreau and Parker,
yeah.
Just kind of walking around going like, well, I don't know. What does it mean to be human?
Yeah.
Are you really saying you'd never make out with a fox?
Yeah, even if she's the fox?
What if it was she had a human fox head but real human lady boobs? What would you do then?
What about a mermaid? What would you do if you met a mermaid, huh?
It basically turns into the... have you ever seen the Christopher Walken centaur sketch from SNL where Chris Parnell's a centaur coming in for a job interview?
Yeah. Yes.
And then he just uses it to ask him questions about being a centaur. Uh-huh. Let's say you saw, would you be attracted to a horse? He's like, well, no, I'm attracted to other centaurs. Let's say you came upon a barn and the front half was in the barn and all you could see was the back half. Would you be attracted to it then? Well, I mean, I guess so. Well, it was a horse.
Yep.
Anyway,
that's this movie.
70 minutes of that. No. Yeah. It's surprisingly, it is surprisingly considerate of the concept and the ethics of it.
Yeah.
Which I wasn't really expecting.
Yeah. I mean, I think one of the things that impresses me about this movie is that it is a nuanced take on this. Like, as I was saying a little while ago, yes, the creatures do end up kind of giving in, you might say, to their urge to do violence. Mm-hmm. But it's more about revenge than it is mindless violence. They're not just like, they don't fully revert to being beasts.
Right.
Instead, they want to inflict the pain on Moreau that he inflicted on them. And in a way, at the end, I'm jumping to the end, unfortunately. Sorry. I think in a lot of ways at the end of this movie, the creatures are more human than they have been.
Sure.
Because they have reached a level of self-awareness where they're saying, we're not men and we're not beasts. You made us into things. Like,
yeah.
they're kind of coming to terms with the reality of their own existence at that point, which I think is much more human than like, ah, yes, my subservient creatures that do my bidding and live in these little straw huts that I built for them.
Yeah. This is not really related to anything, but I do always wonder if animals could talk and they saw some people who are like, you know, I just got out there and really connected with the my beast side. If the animal would be like, why?
Yeah.
Why? You have a nice house.
Yeah. Why would you ever do that?
Yeah.
You just walk into a room and there's food.
Yeah.
What are you doing?
I live my entire life eating and afraid of being killed while eating.
Mm-hmm.
That's it.
Mm-hmm. And if something hurts me, I have no idea how to fix it.
Yeah.
Yep. Animals, man. They got it hard. Unless they're house pet. House pets don't have it hard.
Animals / man, which is this movie.
Which is this movie.
Yeah. I don't love Parker.
Yeah.
He's like the classic.
Yeah.
Observer hero.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like I kind of feel like if you took him out of the movie, nothing really would change.
Yeah.
I actually thought at the beginning when they find him in the water,
mm-hmm.
that it was going to be like Frankenstein structured, where like he had just escaped the island.
Oh.
And he's like, I've woken up on this strange boat. Let me tell you about what just happened.
That would have been interesting.
Because that was the other thing. It's like, so it starts off interesting. They find him on this boat. Okay. Yeah. Then it's like 10 minutes of him getting a new set of clothes.
Yeah.
And then I don't know. I think
hanging out on the floating.
Yeah.
Zoo.
I know that I'm being nitpicky about stuff, but like,
I do know. So
like, does his girlfriend really need to show up at the end? You know,
It gives him a way to get off the island.
He couldn't have found a small boat somewhere.
Maybe not. I did not read The Island of Dr. Moreau.
I have also not read the book.
But I do know that the book starts with, I think, two or three shipwrecked men sharing a lifeboat adrift at sea and kind of trying to negotiate, like, well, we have to kill one of us.
Oh, interesting.
Like, we have no resources, there's no food, there's no water. Like, yeah. One of us has to die. And I think in the midst of that, I forget if it's like there's two guys and one of them kills the other or kills him in self-defense.
Sure.
Or there's three guys and two guys kill each other and the guy who's left is just sort of like, whoa,
sweet.
What the fuck? But it starts with that. And I think in the book, that's supposed to be setting the reader up for man will devolve into a beast.
Yeah, I like that. That's a good story.
And
that's a good
then
thing.
The survivor of this little drama on a lifeboat gets rescued and brought to the island.
This Wells guy?
Yeah.
Might have a future in writing.
Might have been a pretty good writer.
Yeah.
If only someone had given him an opportunity.
I know. It's too bad.
So I think the finding him on a lifeboat is a holdover from that.
That makes sense.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, actor wise, nothing special.
I feel that way about a lot of these movies, though, with the lead guy, especially when he's given nothing to do but be sort of a sounding board for the more interesting characters.
Yeah,
you know, like he's just there to make Dr. Moreau talk.
Right.
He's just there to make Loda talk.
Mm-hmm.
Like he's just there to trigger other characters to do something, and otherwise he's just sort of along for the ride.
Yeah, and it gets tougher too with these older movies when you have these characters because like so many of these actors are just so bland.
Yeah, they're kind of cast for like that specific look.
Yeah, Charles Laughton doing some pretty interesting stuff.
I love him.
Bela Lugosi, obviously.
I think he's
swinging for the fence.
Yeah. Even the guy who plays Montgomery.
Yeah, he was pretty good.
He was pretty good. He had a certain, like, he wins me over early on in the movie in that scene where they've rescued Parker and he's coming back to consciousness and he says, oh, thanks, Doc. Mm-hmm. Like, you patched me up. And he says, you are a doctor, aren't you? And he has that moment. The camera focuses on him and he's like, well, yes, I mean, I was once. And he says it in this very dramatic way. And I was like, yeah, I like you. You're fun.
I don't get any backstory, so I have to imply it with my line reading.
Yes.
Yeah. The other thing that I thought was, just again, looking at when this movie came out, is there's a line in it where Moreau says, do you know what it is to feel like God? Which, again, 2 years earlier, there's the line in Frankenstein where he says, in the name of God, now I know what it feels like to be God.
Yeah.
Which was cut out of the movie for like 50 years.
Yeah.
So a lot changed in 2 years. Yeah. But I do think that's one of the more notable things about this is how hard it goes.
Yeah.
Especially towards the end.
Yes. You've got vivisection.
Mm-hmm.
Human/animal experimentation. You have
subject matter wise. I'm shocked they made this.
What I'm saying. Yeah. Like I can't. You have like ethical issues about experimenting on animals. You have the heavy tones of colonialism and like the treatment of white colonists against native populations. Mm-hmm. You've got like somebody who's messing with evolution. Like the dangers of science are built into all of this. Like you have attempted rape at least once that I had noticed in this. You've got mob justice. You've got all sorts of shit.
Yeah. And I especially down to the fact that is this pre-code? This might be pre-code. I can't remember when the code started. But anyway, the fact that like, the first thing that happens when they get to the island is Moreau being like, do you think he'd sleep with one of our people?
Right.
What happens if we put them together? Do you think they would?
I would like these two unmarried young people, one of whom is technically not even a human, to have interspecies sex and produce offspring. Let's make that happen.
Yes.
Whoa, it is 1933, sir.
Yes.
You're not supposed to talk about any of this.
Yes. So that's pretty impressive that they could get into that.
So does that count as like almost bestiality? When he kisses her, is that bestiality?
I was thinking the same thing. Like, where's the line?
Right.
Not that, you know, it's something I need to know personal reasons. But
that was a very suspicious way of saying that.
I don't know what you're talking about. I just need to know it when I see it so I can call someone about it. Yeah, I mean, I don't know. I mean, that's kind of built into the concept, right?
Right, like, but you're asking 1933 audiences to cope with that, right? To think about that. You're hinting at it, not even hinting, you know, pretty blatantly saying there's a 'cause Moreau's thing with Loda is he's trying to determine is she fully human now? Mm-hmm. And if that is still a question in his mind, it means he doesn't know.
Yeah.
So is she human? Is she not? And I just think it's really impressive that this movie got made and they didn't. There was no thing at the end where it was like, well, she did this, so she must have been a real woman.
Right. Yeah.
Which would have kind of wiped the slate clean of all these interesting questions.
Despite her hairy, sharp fingers.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think that's one of the more interesting things about this concept is that you're getting into the... So, like, I feel like even now, the traditional approach to the what is human...
Are we not men?
Are we not men? Tends to be through a technological lens.
Yeah.
So it's usually robots, right?
Yes.
In Star Trek, it's Data.
AI.
Or, you know, Spock. Spock wasn't a robot, but, you know. Whereas in this one, it's like... it's completely biological and it's like you're dealing with like eugenics and stuff.
And we are several years prior to like full-on Nazism.
That's another thing I was thinking of is like, hey, we're kind of, this is not that far off from what the Nazis were actually doing.
Yes.
A couple of years later.
Yeah.
And it's interesting to look at the what is humanity, what is human question when it comes down to another animal species.
Yeah. But it also, by making them part of this could very easily have just been the limitations of the time period. Mm-hmm. I'm not trying to ascribe a more strategic meaning to it than there maybe was. But by having all of the creatures, even the ones who do still look malformed, having them all be humanoid.
Yeah.
It is kind of saying that Dr. Moreau is surrounded by these people mm-hmm. who just don't look like him.
Right.
And therefore he gets to be dominant over them. And yeah, it's I think very reflective of like real life attitudes, not just towards animals, but towards other people.
Yeah.
And treating other people like animals because they were different.
Now, I can't remember. Is he actively splicing humans, like existing humans with existing animals, or is he creating something new? I can't remember.
He is.
Or is it unclear?
What was my self-care thing from the things you'll find? It's plastic surgeries, blood transfusions, gland extracts, and ray baths.
Okay, so just made up science.
Yes. Yeah. But he is taking animals and trying to transform them wholesale into humans.
Okay.
And the way that this faux science is explained in the movie is all of those things. And he has this whole long monologue about the flowers
mm-hmm.
where he says he accelerated thousands of years of evolution
right.
on these flowers.
Right.
And that's what he says he's doing to the animals, because I think the phrasing was all creatures are tending towards human, which nowadays we know we're actually all tending towards crabs.
Is it true?
Yeah, but it's one of the more common evolutionary paths that creatures take is to some sort of like crab-like form.
I wonder,
to be kind of the final form of a bunch of different things.
I wonder if that's why, I mean, probably not because they're
written growing
by
these pincers.
Yeah, because they were written by the same guy. But in The Time Machine, when the guy goes way, 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 way into the future... the only thing on Earth are these like giant crab creatures,
crab people.
So I don't know if that's indicative of that or if it was just something he thought was scary, but
probably thought it was scary.
Yeah.
Like all the ethical questions in this movie are really interesting. Unfortunately, I do understand why it would be less than entertaining to watch a movie where it's two guys talking about the ethical issues around all of this for extended scenes in a lush jungle setting.
Yeah. Do you find... So the thing that I was thinking about as I was watching this is I was trying to look at it from, you know, thematically what they're trying to say, et cetera, et cetera. And I was trying to reconcile this idea that, okay... Moreau has big white colonist vibes, which would then mean that the creatures are, you know, it's like when white Christians would go into the Amazon or whatever, and they would be like, well, these are savages.
Yeah.
Unless we put top hats on them.
Right. We have to civilize them.
Right. Does that not then equate native peoples with animals?
Kinda, yeah.
That's not great.
No, it's not. But that, again, I think that's part of what makes this movie so interesting, is that on the one hand, it's grappling with a lot of nuanced stuff.
Mm-hmm.
But then on the other hand, by the end of it, we are back to status quo. The island is burning. It's being abandoned by the humans. And our heroes are the fully human people. Like, even Loda is not allowed to survive.
Right.
Like, she has her heroic moment where she saves the humans and it kills her.
Mm-hmm.
And that's it. Then these people go back to the quote-unquote real world and they leave this behind. And they leave the creatures on the island that Moreau was responsible for. They leave them to themselves, right?
Yeah.
Like, they're on their own now. They'll find enough food on this island, or they won't. They'll figure out a way to live together, or they won't.
Yeah.
So it is interesting to have it be, like, layered with all of these different meanings. And then on the other hand, yeah, it is absolutely equating them to, well, you've taken these poor animals and done something horrible to them by trying to make them be humans.
Yeah, I guess it doesn't have to be one thing.
No, it doesn't.
And also, I mean, you know, depending on how you look at it, that this is the point of view of a white colonialist character, mm-hmm. is that these creatures are savages.
Yeah.
There's no reason why you should impart modern, what's the word I'm looking for? Modern understanding of peoples of the world, onto a character from this specific time, you know,
right?
Like, I guess what I'm trying to say is, like, so there's some movies like I can't think of one off the top of my head, but where they'll say, like, oh, this is a misogynist movie, and the response is, it has misogyny in it,
right?
But it is not, in and of itself, a misogynist film,
right?
And I think there's a difference there.
Yes, we've covered a couple movies like that where like the awfulness of the misogyny is the point,
right?
Like, showing how awful it is part of the message of the movie. It's not promoting it as like, look how great this is.
Yeah,
yeah.
And so, I mean, I don't know the book well enough to make that distinction.
Yeah. I do think a lot of this is, it comes down to, like, those who would have the hubris to think they can, that they're allowed to interfere with nature.
Yeah. Yeah.
Whatever that nature might be, whether it's the nature of animals or the nature of a place that you're not from and you don't belong in, and coming in and trying to impose your own order.
Yeah.
And your own ideas on it, by force, with no real reason or authority, just because you can.
Yeah.
That's the bad part.
Yeah. Like what Ivanka Trump and her husband are doing in Albania. Did you hear about that?
Oh, God.
They're trying to buy an island that was up until recently, like a protected island. Mm-hmm. And then all of a sudden the government rolled those things back. And then like a year later, they're like, you know what? We're going to buy this island and turn into a resort.
Great.
Everybody's thrilled about it. Anyway,
I'm sure they
politics corner over.
Yes.
Yeah, I find it really interesting because it's a story that I think works on both levels. Like, those are the best kinds of like satire or whatever. Like, RoboCop. I love RoboCop because RoboCop works as a satire, but it also works as the thing that it's satirizing. Mm-hmm. Like, it works as a over-the-top action movie.
Right.
And I think that's the same thing here where it's like, this works as a metaphor for colonialism or whatever, but it also just works as a monster movie.
Right, right.
And I don't think it has to be one or the other.
Yeah, you can enjoy it for either reason or both.
Right.
Yeah.
So I think that's where things can get a little dicey when you try to parse things out into, well, what is this trying to say?
Especially to
not just like, this movie, just anything.
Yeah, you know? Yeah. To try and specifically say it is specifically this.
Right.
This movie is saying exactly this and nothing else.
Right.
That's where you fall into problems.
Because like if you really wanted to make this a metaphor about cultures and yada yada yada, like the real ending of this movie should be that the creatures of the island. Peacefully arrest Moreau.
Right.
Put him on trial.
Right, right.
And then in front of a jury of his peers, put him in jail.
Yes. You know?
But that's not fun. You want to see them get the tiny knives and cut him and turn him
little
into a chicken
knives.
Man.
They love him. Yeah. and I don't want to go too far in sort of positioning this as some sort of progressive movie because
I just don't think they're thinking that.
It's asking a bunch of interesting questions and I think that's awesome. But, you know, speaking of misogyny, the way women are portrayed in this movie is very much of the time.
Oh, sure.
Like the only motivation for, there's only two women. Mm-hmm. There's Lota and there's Ruth.
Mm-hmm.
And they're both in love with Parker for some reason.
I mean,
Lota, I understand. This is the only young man she's ever met.
Yeah.
Her other options were Montgomery or Dr. Moreau.
What's wrong with the Sayer of the Law? He's got a good job.
They haven't been allowed to see her.
Oh, that's true. Yeah.
So she's been isolated only with these two scientists.
As women should be.
In this movie, apparently, yes. but it, you know, it's Loda especially is a really interesting character because her humanity is contingent upon her behaving in a specifically feminine way.
Yeah.
Like everyone around her, or the men around her, are looking for her to show certain signs of being emotional, of being romantically inclined, of mm-hmm. being sensitive. They like when she cries, Dr. Moreau is thrilled.
Mm.
He has that moment where she thinks she's ruined everything with Parker because he's seen her claws.
Mm-hmm.
And she's sobbing in her room, and Moreau has been sort of examining her hands and being really rough with her, and he's clearly displeased and she's clearly terrified. And she's sad because she thinks she's alienated Parker.
Mm-hmm.
And when Moreau sees her start to cry, he grabs her face and he says something to Montgomery like, "Do you see this? Tears. She's the first one to ever cry. She is human. I'm not beaten." And he smiles and he laughs and his whole demeanor changes. And
yeah.
he's so excited because she's like performing the right type of femininity mm-hmm. to be considered a quote unquote real woman.
Sure. Well, I think also just in general to be yeah. like considered a real person,
mm.
you know, woman either way, but yeah. I know what you're talking about.
But like she originated from a panther.
Right.
She's the panther woman.
Yeah.
And yet she is kind of the most peaceful and docile and sort of just generally alluring character. Mm. In the whole movie.
Like, it is kind of shocking that it's the Panther Woman and she's not like a femme fatale from a,
right?
Like
yeah.
a noir movie or something.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. Like there's a standard for the way a woman is supposed to behave. Mm-hmm. And if Loda can hit that standard without understanding what it is, then ta-da, she is human. And if right. she doesn't, she's a beast.
Yeah.
And it's just really, I think it's really interesting. And then on the flip side, you have Ruth, who is much more civilized, but is kind of, I don't know, the same
yeah.
as Loda. Like, she's less sensual and kind of sexy because she's mostly dressed the whole time.
Mm-hmm.
But it is that same, like, she's very docile. She's very, like, Dr. Moreau kind of browbeats them into spending the night before they leave. And she's just like, oh, okay. Like,
she is assertive enough to charter a boat.
True.
To go out there, though.
Yeah, yeah. She does give that initial captain what for.
Yeah.
Makes him go to the American consulate or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
But that part of this movie feels very of its time, though.
Yeah.
Where it's like, ah, yes, you're coming because you must get married
yes.
to this man. So you must save him from being shipwrecked on an island.
Yeah. At the same time, though, I do really like that Moreau, as a character, remains consistent where when he sees her crying.
Yeah.
His response is completely academic.
Yes.
And has nothing to do with the fact that this woman is hurt in some way.
Yeah, no, he doesn't care about that at all.
Yeah.
It's all the scientific results.
And same with like putting her together with Parker.
Mm-hmm.
It's completely scientific. He's yeah. like, well, let's just see what happens.
Yeah, he says when he thinks he's successfully trapped Parker on the island, that now he and Loda getting together is kind of inevitable because time and monotony will do the work. That they'll just be stuck in proximity to one another and they'll have nothing else to do.
Yeah. That's why all my dates were just long road trips. I figured stick in the car long enough,
time
eventually.
And monotony.
Yeah.
Yeah. I love Charles Laughton in this.
Mm-hmm.
I think he hits the right level of being a little bit campy and a little bit of chewing the scenery without being totally over the top.
Yeah, he never quite reaches mustache twirling bad guy.
Right.
Despite the fact that he walks around with a whip.
Yes. But I also like that he he's charming enough that I believe that people believe him.
Mm-hmm.
Do you know what I mean? Like sometimes you watch these movies and the mad scientist or the villain character or whatever, they're so, even for the time period, they're so over the top mustache twirling. You're like, why would you ever stay on this guy's island? Like, wouldn't you immediately meet him and be like, we have to go right now?
Right, yeah.
But I understand why people kind of, as they show up, kind of continually want to give him the benefit of the doubt because he seems so reasonable. He says things in such a calm way. He seems like
he's well dressed.
Yep.
He has his own island.
Well educated.
He's a financier from New York.
Yeah.
He's friends with the soon to be president. Why wouldn't you want to spend time?
You're on a real political tear tonight.
Listen.
You know, you don't usually get so political.
It's been a long week.
Yeah.
Probably. Mm-hmm. They're probably going to say, Dr. Murrow, oh, he hanged himself. Clearly he didn't.
When we all know that he was vivisected by creatures with little knives.
Metaphorically, yes.
Or in this movie, literally.
Literally, yeah. But yeah, I think it's also, you know, going back to the colonialism thing, he literally gives them essentially commandments to live by.
Yes.
That.
What is the law?
Yeah.
Yeah.
That, I think that's one of the clever things about this is that they obfuscate that stuff. Just the story in general. They obfuscate that stuff enough where it's like not completely obvious what they're doing.
Mm.
Like they never treat Murrow like he's a god or
they
anything.
There's one scene where they really do, and it's the first sort of fireside scene in the creature camp with their straw huts. When Bela Lugosi, as the Sayer of the Law, sort of goes through the whole ritual for the first time while Murrow stands on the rocks kind of above them and demands, what is the law? And they have this kind of call and response. And then after they go through their commandments, really, they start saying, his is the hand that created us. Like, right, his is the hand that heals. And they kind of do have this awe towards him. And Murrow loves it. Like, you can tell how pleased he is at their subservience. And then the big moment for the community of creatures at the end is after, I think the guy's name is Oron. He kills the ship captain towards the end of the movie. And it's this, like, world-breaking revelation for the creatures because in their minds, men like Murrow can't die.
Right.
And so when he kills the captain, all of them have the realization, wait, the captain was like Murrow. He can die. And they have another kind of amongst themselves, like a call and response of the one who killed the captain says he can die. And Bela Lugosi's character kind of slowly says back, like, he can die. And they have a collective moment of, wait, this person is not a god. We outnumber him. Let's go fuck him up.
Right. Yeah.
And that's how the mob starts.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think, you know, Murrow's interesting as a character because he is he's scientific about what he's doing, but much like a traditional colonialist, he thinks he's doing something for the betterment of these people, but he is also enjoying the fact that he is their ruler, essentially.
Yeah. Yeah. I also think he's more like I compare him in my head a lot to Dr. Frankenstein.
Sure.
And I think the big difference is that at least on the surface, maybe deep down, Dr. Frankenstein didn't genuinely feel this way. But Frankenstein at least pays lip service towards he wants to do this for the sake of all humanity.
Sure.
Like if he can create life and he can bring these inanimate tissues back from the dead, it's going to change medicine. It's going to prolong human life. It's going to do all these things for others. Dr. Murrow really just wants to go back to London and be like, see?
Yeah.
Do you fucking see? I was right. I can do it. I'm the best. I am God. Fuck you. Like that is his entire plan.
And also Frankenstein.
His entire plan is I want to go back to London with Loda as Exhibit A and be like, but look at her.
Yeah. And they can be hot.
Right.
But Frankenstein's like he achieves it once and then he's like, I'm bored with this now.
But also like with Frankenstein, the monster is made out of component parts of humans.
Yeah.
And he, it does almost become this progeny, this this offspring of Victor Frankenstein or, or whichever name Frankenstein
Henry,
you want to call him.
Victor.
Whatever.
Toby. Toby Wong. Motherfucking Charlie Chan.
And because of that, he is responsible for what the monster does.
Yeah.
Whether he wants to be or not. And that's kind of the whole story in Frankenstein is like, you made this guy. And he's doing bad stuff.
Yeah.
You are responsible for it. You have to deal with it. Whereas Moreau, there's no sense that he thinks of any of his creations as his children.
Mm.
He doesn't ever call them his children. There's no affection towards them. Like you were saying earlier, he keeps things so scientific.
Yeah.
There's no emotional connection to them. So even as he wants to create humans, he does not offer them like human emotion, and I think that's really interesting in this movie.
Yeah. One of the other things I was thinking of is there's a H.P. Lovecraft story. I can't remember the name of it, but it's like it's one of the more easily parsable racist stories that he's written.
Yeah.
Where the horror of the story is that he finds out that his grandfather had married a white ape. And so he finds out that he is the progeny of a man and an ape.
Oh my God.
And that to him is the most horrible thing.
Yeah.
You know, and obviously
my pure blood, why?
Yeah. And obviously he wasn't writing it with actual apes in mind, if you know what I mean.
His other most horrifying things are he once accidentally touched a woman.
Like, yeah. Yeah. He was.
Don't get me wrong. Still love H.P. Lovecraft.
Yeah. I do
too. Still love the media that's come out around it. Really cool. Like the cosmic horror thing I love, but.
He was really.
Problematic dude.
He's, yeah. Problematic in a way that is not uncommon. Because he is, he was like the epitome of the guy who has a lot of opinions, but has never actually gone anywhere.
Yeah.
Cause like all of his shit, all of his racist stuff was, he spent like 90% of his life in Providence.
Yeah.
And then he got married briefly and spent like a summer in New York.
And was like,
All he did was complain about the Italians and stuff. And it wasn't like he was trying
those
to interact.
Italians.
Yeah, he like wasn't trying to engage with anybody. He was just choosing to be removed and racist.
Yeah,
you know?
Yeah.
And then eventually he did kind of dial it down a bit. I don't know to what extent, but I think he did kind of.
People were like, "You're getting old. It's not cute anymore."
Yeah. But yeah, there's a little bit of. It's funny because it's the same. It's like the other side of this story.
Yeah.
Where it's like, what if the story was about the great grandson of Parker and the Panther Woman discovering going back to his home
realizing you're part panther.
I don't know why that just popped in my head.
That's
anyway
funny.
The finale of this is I think quite good.
Yes,
it's I mean Bela Lugosi earning all 800 of his dollars.
Aww.
At the end here where he gives a great speech.
Yeah.
And then leads the rebellion of the creature, the animal people.
Yes, to the House of Pain.
Yes, great. Yeah, and it's like there's great terms in this too that I think have been used through the years and other things. Like there's no music. So the one thing that this was a movie that I really felt like needed music.
Really,
there's a lot of stuff in this where it like specifically the one that pops out is. It's either when the one guy kills the second captain or when, what's her name? Loda?
Yeah.
Kills that guy.
Yeah.
It's just like, it's the kind of thing where it's like, it's dead silent. Like, I don't even think there's like special effects. Like there's no like Foley work or anything.
Yeah.
And I'm just like, I don't know. I feel like this could, if this had a little bit of juice to it musically.
Yeah. I kind of like the lack of music.
Okay.
I definitely like it in the scene where Loda kills the other guy because she's a panther.
Sure.
Like the kind of silent hunter in the jungle makes perfect sense for that. That she would this would be a quiet kill. But I understand what you're saying, especially where the movie is so talky.
Yeah.
I understand kind of wanting the at least some more Foley work to punch up some of the more action. Yeah. But I do kind of like how a lot of this movie, the soundtrack is groups of animals and or groups of creatures.
That's true, yeah.
Making noises in the background that you can kind of hear. Like, I love the juxtaposition of when Parker wakes up on the ship and hears the floating zoo versus when they're on the island and in the distance they hear the village of creatures.
Mm-hmm.
Going through the law or going against the law or arguing with each other. I think that's really cool.
Yeah.
Yeah. But it is weird. It's kind of weird that there's no music.
Yeah. It's funny to think about these movies not having, like, they all had music at the front. Like, they'll have like an opening score or whatever, but then, you know, in the, at this point they weren't doing full scores yet.
Yeah.
Cause sound was still so new. But this has no music in it, but it did inspire a lot of musicians.
Yes.
But as I was saying, like the certain term, like I don't think the term House of Pain existed before this. I'm assuming the book.
Yeah.
And that's something that everybody uses. Like, let's see, what do we got here? Devo was a big fan of this movie.
Yep.
If you know the song that with the line, "Are we not men? We are Devo." "Are we not men?" comes from this.
Yep.
Van Halen has a song called House of Pain. The original lyrics were apparently about this movie. And when they would perform it live, David Lee Roth would give the audience like a synopsis of the movie.
I love that.
Before they started playing it.
I absolutely love that.
And then when they finally recorded it, they changed the lyrics.
Aww.
Oingo Boingo had a song called No Spill Blood with the refrain, "What is the law?"
Mm.
Blondie has a song called Island of Lost Souls.
Mm-hmm.
So it was a very influential movie.
Yeah.
That's separate from what I want to talk about the ending. But the ending I think is great. That last charge of the creatures is excellent. And the way this is a pre-code movie, I did look it up. The code started next the following year.
Wow.
So yeah, this is one of those movies where if it was made a year later,
it wouldn't have come out.
Either wouldn't have been made.
Yeah.
Or would have been drastically cut back.
Wow.
You'd probably get something closer to, I think it was Cat People. Cat People was later, I think.
I think so.
You probably get something like Cat People where it's like, they're animal people, but you never see them.
Right.
Which is scarier.
Like, gesture at the idea. Yeah. Yeah.
That's another thing I like is that in any given scene, there's always like one guy just kind of in the background, like snooping around like a creep.
I like that too, where they're sort of like still animalistic enough that they're kind of, camouflaged amongst the jungle.
The one thing I don't know what else I wanted, but the ending was very abrupt. Like when they're just in the boat and then the guy's like, "Don't look back."
I find that very funny because he also stops to light his pipe first. So they finally, like, Loda has been killed defending them so that they can escape. Clearly Dr. Moreau is not going to make it out. There's a huge fire happening. They're hearing like the mob chanting and yelling. And they make it to like the one little dinghy on the whole island and they get like a little bit offshore and he stops to light his fucking pipe and then says to them, "Don't look back." Well, he rows away. I find that very funny.
Yeah.
Yeah. But it's a great ending image.
It is.
Of the burning island behind them.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's that and Frankenstein, I feel like, really set the template for ending your horror movie with everything just burning to the ground, which always works.
Yep.
Always works.
Yep.
So overall, I guess I'm not as high on it as a lot of people are, but I do like it. I think it's pretty good.
I think it's a great looking movie too.
Yeah.
Like the use of light in this movie is really great. The way the shadows are done.
I would like to see the Criterion edition of it because the version we watched was pretty shitty looking.
It wasn't great, but you can tell even past that.
Yeah.
That clearly a lot of thought went into how the movie was lit. And there are a couple scenes where Dr. Moreau is in shadow, but the light glints off of his eyes, like almost like an animal in the dark, which I thought was like a really clever little bit to put in there. So there's a lot of like visual flourishes in this that I appreciate.
Yeah. And, you know, like I said, you do get that great sort of parade of freaks mm-hmm. at the end, which, mm-hmm. you know, after I read that book, I can't not watch these movies without thinking about World War One.
Yeah.
And like that sequence had me thinking about, I mean, as a necessity of the time, which is all really all they could do with makeup. It's a lot of facial feature stuff.
Yeah. But, yeah. A lot of prosthetic noses.
Yeah. That in particular, that sequence is a lot of like fucked up faces.
Yeah.
There's one guy who's got like a hoof.
Yeah. Leg. Like a cloven foot kind of deal.
Yeah. And there's, I don't know. I'm sure you can read into all that stuff as much want, but it's a pretty, that last sequence is pretty freaky.
Yeah. Literally and figuratively.
Yeah. I bet would have been really cool to see at the time.
Yeah.
Yeah, is there anything else you wanted to say about Island of Lost Souls? Oh, very famously, this has been, Island of Dr. Moreau has been adapted a couple times. Mm. Most famously, I would say, in the Richard Stanley / John Frankenheimer production of the 90s, starring Marlon Brando and Val Kilmer.
I have not seen that.
Oh, are you aware of it?
No.
Oh, Amanda.
Are you saying I have weekend plans now?
Yes, because there's the movie.
Uh-huh.
But then there's a documentary called, I believe that the documentary is called Island of Lost Souls or something similar to that, because it was such a shit show that the director got fired.
Oh.
So like, this is Brando in the 90s, so basically uncontrollable. This is the guy's second movie, and he's working with Brando, who notoriously had no patience for that.
Yeah.
So Brando's fucking with him. He's not showing up. Val Kilmer's there, like, in the middle of a divorce.
Ooh.
I think, like, just after Batman, so he's, like, at the height of his own hubris.
Oh, my God.
He's acting like an asshole. The movie is famous for, like, Brando just disappeared for a while. And so, like, the latter half of the movie features Val Kilmer just doing a Marlon Brando impression. It's really fucking weird.
What?
It's insane. And, you know, it's got all this insane prosthetics work, right?
Uh-huh.
And apparently Richard Stanley snuck back onto the set in monster makeup so he could see what was going on with the production of the movie. Highly recommend the documentary.
Wow.
You should probably watch the actual movie so you have like context and stuff.
Yeah.
And it's, I think it's where the concept of the Austin Powers concept of mini me comes from, because Brando,
I didn't know that would have had an origin story.
Brando has this like little guy who's like his shadow and like kind of dresses like him. And he's one of these guys who's like, he's an actual, he was like two or 3 feet tall or something like that. It's a fucking weird, I'll play you the trailer. The trailer alone is, you're going to be like, what the fuck is going on
here? Okay, good.
Also,
I mean, I am going to be on some long ass flights coming up later this
month. Oh yeah. So. Oh, absolutely. Richard Stanley is Australian.
There we go.
So definitely download these things. Watch them on the plane.
Perfect. Thank you.
Also, fun fact, when I watched the movie for the first time, I got very confused because one of the creatures is played by an actor named Neil Young, who I was like, what?
Yeah.
That's not, it can't be the musician Neil Young. It is not.
This is like when I found out there were two Nick Caves.
Is there really?
There's an artist Nick Cave and then there's a musician Nick Cave.
Oh, which is funny because there are two Warren Ellis's.
Oh.
Warren Ellis, the musician who plays with Nick Cave.
Oh.
And Warren Ellis, the comic book artist.
Wow.
I'm sorry, writer.
Damn.
Yeah. I got very confused the first time I
saw it. I wonder
what
the other musicians who play with Nick Cave are named.
Jack Kirby.
Yeah.
Stan Lee.
Yeah.
And Pablo Picasso. But yeah, so definitely check those freak shows out.
All right.
But yeah, I would... Yeah. If you're someone who's into classic like old school monster movies, like the Universal era stuff,
yeah,
definitely check this out.
Yes. Yeah, 100%.
Yeah, it's, I'd say it's a little less, the Universal ones are I feel like there's an easier buy-in for those.
Sure.
This one is a little bit more heady.
Yeah.
But I think it's worth a watch.
Yeah, I totally agree. And I think this kind of goes to my argument of like when we covered The Blob.
Yep.
And I was saying how The Blob as a concept has had such longevity in kind of the popular consciousness. And I think this has as well.
Oh, the Moreau thing is.
Yeah.
As we were talking about it, mm-hmm. I was thinking, this is just Jurassic Park.
Yeah.
Jurassic Park is just Island of Dr. Moreau.
Yep. So many things. I'm sure if we sat and really thought about it, there are probably a bunch of popular IP.
Oh, totally.
That if you trace them back to its roots, it's like, well, this is kind of just a version of the Island of Dr. Moreau.
Yeah. That HGLs knew what he was doing.
Yeah. Too bad no one gave him a shot.
Yeah, it's too bad. I read once, I don't know if this is true because I don't think I've ever actually looked it up because I don't want to know if it's not true. That supposedly
so no one tell us if this is not true.
Supposedly his tombstone says, "I told you bastards I was right," or something like that.
If that's not true, when I die, I want that to be what my tombstone says. So like I wanted to say H.G. Wells.
Yeah. Like
I told you bastards I was right. Yeah.
Yeah.
But I want to be buried
there. I want one of those tombstones, you know, where they have like the really hyper realistic like etching photographs. Mm-hmm. But I want the photograph to be like of Michael Keaton or something.
I was going to say Kurt Russell.
Yeah. Or that. Yeah. Or just like a Ninja Turtle.
I really like the Ninja Turtle option because I'm imagining some post-apocalyptic society that's like come back from the brink of human extinction. And they're like, ah, yes, the artifacts of the past world, and this is where they would bury their dead, and apparently there was another species that lived here that was this weird oval shaped thing.
Yes, I think he was their god. Yes. They killed him for it.
Yeah.
But yeah, I think that's gonna do it for Island of Lost Souls. This is number 118 on our list. How do you feel about that?
It's a little high. It's a little high, but I would still keep it.
High as in like...
Like a little closer to 100, I would probably bump it down closer to like 140-ish,
sure.
Maybe. I feel like this is the pocket we're always putting movies in.
Yeah, the back 50 is pretty dense.
Yeah. Well, I said 140.
Yeah.
So I give it pop culture influence and longevity.
Mm-hmm.
I also think it was extremely well made.
Yep.
And I think it's just a freaky movie.
Yeah, I would... You'd keep it on the list?
Definitely, yeah.
Yeah. I would probably keep it on the list as well. Yeah. Because of its longevity and its influence and, you know, et cetera, et cetera. Yeah, I would agree with you. I'd probably, I don't know, once you pass like 110,
yeah,
it's just all kind of runs together.
A little bit, yeah.
Yeah, I wouldn't put it in the top 100, let's put it that way.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah.
So that's going to do it for Island of Lost Souls. I'm hitting the randomizer button. Beep, boop, boop, beep, boop, boop, beep, boop. And next time, which again will be late July, unfortunately.
Sorry, guys.
We will be jumping all the way up to number 6.
Ooh.
With Let the Right One In.
Oh.
Which we covered the remake, I want to say, in the first 10 or 15 episodes that we did.
Yeah,
like
Jesus.
Way back when.
Yeah, yeah.
As I said earlier, time as you get older just compresses and just goes by. So to me I was like, oh, I mean, we just watched that other one, which was 5 years ago.
Should be interesting.
Yeah, that'll be a fun one to do. Let's assuming the list doesn't drastically change in a month and a half.
Yeah,
but we will see. But yeah, so join us for that again. Thanks. If you'd like to support the show, head over to patreon.com/thepenskyfile. Follow us on Patreon as we head down the sequel sidewalk.
For some reason, my brain said highway, and I think sequel it's because we did Final Destination 2 recently.
Maybe, yeah.
Yeah.
June, we are doing
28
years later.
Yes.
We just did Psycho 2. Mm-hmm. We've done Gremlins 2, which I assume you probably listened to on our main feed.
Final Destination 2.
Final Destination 2. Lots of twos.
I mean, it's sequels.
Yeah, but I... It's weird we haven't done the first. I mean, like, we haven't really jumped outside of the second movie.
Yeah, I guess 28 years later will be
that's technically the third movie.
Yeah, that'll be your
Tastes
excursion out.
Dracula Has Risen from the Grave, I think, is like the third or fourth. I can't remember.
Yeah. That's down the line a little.
Yeah. But yeah, so that'll be fun. And check out the extra Stanley Hotel episode we're putting out.
Yes, and all of our past years.
Coming. All of our past years. And while we are away, I will probably put out something from the backlogs of the Patreon of years hence.
From the vault.
From the vault.
Yes.
So yeah, enjoy that. And we'll see you guys next time.
Bye, everyone.